Welcome to this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon is with me from NAB Show. Hey, Colin.
I'm in Las Vegas, windy Las Vegas. Las Vegas in Las Vegas. It's been very, very windy here, Will, in the last couple of days, but no dust storms, thank goodness, as we experienced a couple of years ago. Really, a ton of stuff going on here, as usual. But before we get to that, I think there was something that both confirmed trends that both of us are seeing in the market today from our friends at YouTube TV, right?
Yeah, we both shed a little bit of a tear today because the great deal on YouTube TV seems to be over.
The bonanza is over.
All good things must come to an end, sadly. YouTube TV kind of a little bit out of the blue. I've given credit for keeping a lid on this, but they announced a $15 monthly price increase, added 10 new channels, a little tweak on the DVR service and some new features. But the big news is adding $15 a month. So if you were grandfathered in as an early YouTube TV subscriber at $35 a month, which both you and I were, tack on 15 to 35, we each got a 43% rate increase starting in May, which is a definite ouch, right?
It makes that 5 to 7% that we've been getting from cable systems seem puny.
talk about making it all up in one shot, YouTube TV. Wow. So yeah, 15 on 35 is 43%. If you were a more recent subscriber, you also get the $15 increase. That's on the 40 that you've been paying. That's a 38% increase. And on top of that, if you subscribe through Apple, you're now paying $55 a month, again, with the new $15 per month rate increase. And as I said, they have added all the Discovery, if not all, then all the top Discovery networks, Discovery Channel, HGTV, Food, TLC, Investigation Discovery, Animal Planet, Travel, Motor Trend. They also added the Oprah Winfrey Network, and they also mentioned that Epix is now available as an add-on. So anyway, 70-plus channels now on YouTube TV, but in a way, Colin, I think now with them jumping up to 50 a month, and we recently saw rate increases for DirecTV Now, which we've talked about before, Hulu Live raised their rate, I think we're into the realm of the new normal for pricing on the so-called virtual pay TV services, which for a window of time there, albeit briefly, were pretty aggressively priced. And I have to say, I'm just a little bit surprised here that Google chose not to subsidize YouTube TV a little bit longer in a land grab attempt to try to rack up even more subscribers, even if they were either break even or losing a little bit of money. Because again, we've talked in the past, YouTube TV is clearly a play by Google to nose its way into the TV advertising business. And that's a scale business, of course, as Google knows. And it seemed like they had some more running room, but they've chosen to kind of ratchet things down on the growth side, clearly, because $50 a month is more than $40 a month. And you have to believe that people are going to start doing the math on whether it makes sense to cut the cord or be broadband only and go with the YouTube TV or a virtual operator. And some percentage of them, the math is not going to be as compelling anymore.
I completely agree. And I've got to tell you, Will, this is completely expected. They increased the price $5 last year from 35 to 40. Even at 40, my calculations said that they were making a loss possibly of $5 per subscriber. So the $50 price to me sounds like there is a little bit of profitability in there, even with the addition of the Discovery channels. There were two things I think I really wanted to reinforce here that I think I've said before on podcasts before. The first thing is, yeah, the $35 and $40 price point was unrealistic for the amount of channels that they were providing. They couldn't make money that way. $50, they probably are. The second thing, which I think is reflective in all of the virtual MVPDs now, with them all providing cost increases to their major plans is that there really is nowhere for them to hide the underlying increase in the license costs for the channels that they're providing. We do know that they are paying more than traditional pay television operators. And so, simply put, when the providers come to them with price increases above inflation, they simply must increase prices or they will be making a loss. And this is the new normal for this business. So I this is really where I was expecting us to end up. And I'm afraid that I don't think maybe we will see a 43% increase in price in YouTube, but get ready for regular 5 to 10% increase in prices for virtual MVPDs going forward. There simply is no way that they can hide those underlying increases in the licensed TV channels.
So the question then becomes, assuming you're right, which I tend to think you probably are, although this is a pretty big bite, so we'll see when they come back for another bite. But assuming that you're right and there are increases ongoing, what does it then mean for the category? Because the category has grown pretty rapidly in a relatively short period of time, 5 million, 7 million, depending upon what estimate you believe in. I know you have your own estimates. That's been pretty good growth. Do you think it sort of slows to a crawl from here? As I was saying before, more people that are existing pay TV subscribers do the math and realize it just isn't worth breaking out of their bundle, and or broadband onlys realize that, yeah, even though they miss having some linear networks and watching live sports, it's just not worth the $50 a month versus what it was, $40 a month. Where do you think things go?
So I think, I know I've heard some forecasts saying that they see cord cutting to traditional pay television operators in the US slowing next year. And by my calculations, traditional operators lost about 4.5 million. Now, if you factor in the virtual operators, the loss is quite a bit smaller than that. But taking those out, it's 4.5 million. And I was actually expecting that to accelerate. I think I might actually pull back a little bit now from saying that, and maybe there is some truth to this expectation that cord cutting could slow a bit as people pause and really think very hard about is it worth it for saving of, I don't know, whatever it is for them as an individual, when really the floor we're talking about, with one exception, and I'll get to that in just a second, is $40, $50, really $50. That's what we're talking about these days with the DVR. The one exception, of course, is Sling TV, and Sling TV's entry point remains $25, and you get 25 to 30 channels, I think, in their blue and their orange packages, which you can get into for that low entry point of $25. You get a great set of packages. I've got a feeling that people will be taking a long, hard look at Sling TV at that entry level and saying, well, can I live without the other channels? And that could well mean that there's a return for more vigorous growth with Sling TV. Overall, though, I've got to believe last year, let's see, between Q3 of 2017 and Q3 of 2018, there was 117% growth in subscribers for virtual MVPDs. I would expect that to halve. Something really decreased dramatically going forward. I can't see them continuing to grow at quite that aggressive rate with the price increases that we're seeing. Well,
yeah. So you're clearly on board with the idea that higher rates across the board here means lower growth, and probably accrues at some level to the benefit of the incumbents, for whom many subscribers are just, they'll do that quick math and realize it's just not worth disrupting their lives to cut the cord and break their bundle.
Could be true, or we could see some dramatic moves, and that is we could see people saying, I can live without both. Or we could see a big uptick in people going, hey, maybe it's time to put that antenna on my roof, or get that active antenna and start watching broadcast TVs for my Niners games, or, you know, for my Mariners baseball, or whatever. We could see a big uptick in people doing that again.
Assuming you're able to put an antenna.
That is, of course, assuming you're able to do that.
yeah, urban dwellers can't. And then the other variable here is the role of the cord nevers, people who never had pay TV in the first place. And I think a key part of the idea of the virtuals by keeping their prices low is that they could basically make a, you know, cost that, a value sort of play to the cord nevers. And that value play, the low price play, is now being dissipated. So you have to believe some of the cord nevers say thanks, but no thanks also.
I got to believe that too, Will. It's, you know, for that age group, for the, which is predominantly young people under 34 years of age, I got a feeling that they're going to take one look at the pricing and go, you know, maybe I can live without that for a little bit more. Or they just do it for very specific things, you know, NCAA basketball, I love that. I'm going to subscribe for a month and then dump it. So we could see churn increase. Either way, I think we are going to see, I mean, we've seen it already with DirecTV Now, right? When they ended their subsidies and the price shot up, their growth really just sagged to very, very low numbers. So I think we'll see the same thing now with YouTube TV and with the rest. So there you go. That's where we are.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I've said for a while, I think Google, Disney, and AT&T are the future of pay TV in terms of which way the trends go. And again, this move by Google to raise the YouTube TV price definitely suppresses interest. So we will keep an eye. But anyway, you, as we said, are at NAB. I'm not, for the first time in many years, watching from the sidelines this year. But there are three themes you want to quickly recap for us, and then we'll get into a little bit of the details of each.
I do want to recap three themes. I've been very busy. I think I've had 20 plus meetings already. I've moderated several sessions and had discussions. And there were three themes I wanted to touch on that I'm really seeing a lot of here at NAB 2019. The first one got going right out the gate, Will. I did a sit down with Dave Mowry, who is the VP of Product and Business Development for IBM Watson Media and Cloud Video. And we were really discussing how AI is used in media and businesses today. And one of the things he said, boy, has that resonated for me over the last couple of days. He said, AI is being used behind the scenes every day in real ways that aren't always obvious. And I've got to say, I felt like half of the meetings I've taken at the show have really been an element, there's been a strong element of AI in practical solutions that has been in that discussion. And I wanted to highlight just one of them, which really stuck out to me. We actually did an interview with Bhavesh Vagelia, who is the CEO of a company called PayWizard. I think it was late last year, really super, super interview, very interesting. PayWizard have this AI-powered product called Singular, which is, this product is really a business intelligence, a video business intelligence platform using AI. And it's been, they've been using this with as yet an unnamed SVOD provider in the UK market, a fairly substantial one. And Singular was able to predict with 95% accuracy which customers who were on a free trial were going to churn at the end of that free trial. They weren't going to sign up. So that's kind of interesting, but it's really how you use that data. And this is what really impressed me, Will. So this SVOD provider, they have these web chat windows. And what they were doing is when a free trialer went to cancel their subscription, they would pop up one of these web chat windows and try and convince them to stick around. So this reactive mode of trying to save these guys, they got about 22% of people to change their mind and to sign up and become paying customers. But get this, when they used this Singular data, as soon as Singular was able to predict with high confidence that somebody was going to churn, that's when they would pop up this web chat window. So it was being in a very proactive mode. And doing that and initiating this conversation much earlier in the process, they were able to save 44% of these guys. So this was a really practical use of AI that is a moneymaker for SVOD providers. So I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, that does sound impressive. Certainly saving half the folks you thought were going to leave. I think any business would take that, right?
You bet they would. So the second thing I wanted to touch on was cloud. And oh my goodness, cloud is enormous at the show. Again, I think there was an element of cloud infrastructure, cloud being used in video businesses in many of the discussions I had. And I wanted to highlight two things that really typify this discussion. The first thing is, my goodness, Google is just all over this show this year, not only with targeted products like Android TV, which, by the way, is having great success now with operators. I had a quick chat with that team, and they're expecting major providers now in the US to convert to using Google Android TV on their set-top boxes. But it's really with the cloud and the cloud, Google's cloud media platform. And here I had a couple of conversations with folks, Anil Jain, who's the new head of cloud media for Google. And he's talking about how they're really being successful now in helping video services move a lot of the infrastructure into the cloud. They are very, very sharply targeted towards taking on AWS, which, of course, Amazon Web Services, which is the number one, and Microsoft Azure, which is number two. They think they're number three. So they're all over the place. Went to a great event last night with them and a lot of companies talking with Google. The second example was this I thought was really pretty amazing. VDMS is Verizon Digital Media Services has a great platform for particularly for live delivery, but it does VOD, it does on demand as well, extremely well. They have duplicated their entire stack in the cloud on Microsoft Azure. So now you can run your service using VDMS and have the security of knowing that if there's any problem whatsoever with any of the physical hardware running in VDMS, that it's duplicated in Azure, and so you shouldn't miss a beat. Your video service should keep running without a hiccup. So I thought that those are two great examples of how cloud is really driving conversations now at NAB, at this broadcaster conference. Very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. And again, it sort of ties back to the YouTube TV conversation as well, because arguably their biggest differentiator is still that unlimited DVR space, which of course is all in the cloud, and sounds like Google is leveraging cloud not only for its own benefit, but for clients as well in the video business.
You bet. Yeah, that's absolutely true. The third thing I wanted to highlight was live. And so in years past, we've talked a lot about live streaming online. And one of the things that we've discussed, I think, in the podcast a lot is that linear, particularly ad-supported linear, is now becoming a very important category online. That was absolutely in evidence here at NAB, but there was a really sharp focus on live streaming delivery. And one of the biggest bugaboos of live streaming delivery is latency, this delay behind the live event. And I've seen some actually really amazing demonstrations here at the show of live delivery in extremely low latency situations. So probably the shortest delay is the one I saw at the Limelight booth. And what they were doing was they had a camera right there, HD camera, looking down at me as I chatted with the two Limelight chaps. And this video stream was being uploaded into the cloud, sent over to Paris, and then sent back to the show, streamed back to the show. And really, Will, I couldn't believe it. There was less than a second delay. And this was being done over the public internet. This is not a private network. This was just being done on the public internet with less than a second delay, which I thought was pretty amazing. And then I just saw another demo which was very similar to that. And they, in that demo, they were basically sending this dab stream pretty much around the world. And there was only about, I think, a 4-second delay. This was on the Red Bee media booth. I was only seeing like a 4-second delay in that round trip. So this is pretty amazing. One of the biggest problems, of course, with live delivery is when somebody's watching a television channel, like with the Super Bowl, and you're watching with a stream, you're often 30 seconds or more behind. Well, it looks like we are finally getting technology coming on online, which is going to allow us to watch with virtually no delay, so that you can, when somebody scores the touchdown, you're seeing it at the same time as somebody on a television screen. So that was, I think, very impressive. Some of the demonstrations I saw here were very impressive in that department.
And low latency, especially as you talk about it for sports, if that world truly develops, that seems like that could be a major driver, key benefit for any OTT service that has live content.
You bet. And that was, you know, of course, this is the key driver here for this. It's the sports, and getting live sports at scale with low latency is probably the biggest challenge that people face right now in online delivery.
Yeah, cool. Well, three pretty good themes: AI, cloud, and live. No doubt, big themes in the industry, and big themes we're going to be talking lots more about in the future.
You bet. And there was also a couple of solutions I saw, Will, that sort of combined both the cloud and live delivery. Well, all of them have some sort of cloud element. But I saw this UK company called Blackbird that have this high quality codec, which basically allows you to very simply ingest a live stream using a Mac or PC in a local environment. And upload that into the cloud and distribute it in extremely high quality with very low delay, and deliver basically to any browser using a JavaScript player. So, you know, lots of different applications that are leveraging the cloud and delivering great live content. So I'm really excited. I think what we're going to see is we are going to see a lot of sports online now using this infrastructure, and it's great. I think it's going to be really good for consumers. They're going to have a lot of live content to look at going forward.
All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind. I think that's all we have time for today, Colin. So have a good time there at NAB Show, and safe travels back.
I certainly will, and hopefully no dust storms between now and my exit tomorrow.
I agree. All right, well, thanks everyone for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News and Screen Media Podcast, and we'll see you all again next week.